Frank Muir goes into mathematics and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
I went shopping the other day. They've got some wonderful bargains down the local supermarket. I got 5 pence off washing powder, 3 pence off cheese, 7 pence off tea, and 6 pence off sausages. And when I got to the checkout, the girl added up my bill and said, "That's funny." I said, "What is?" She said, "Well, according to this, we owe you 9 pence.
Well, the sum I gave you for homework was, you remember, if your dad walks 4 miles in 1 hour, how long will he take to walk 30 miles? Why haven't you done it?
My dad's not back yet.
You know, I've just read a statistic that says that a woman gives birth every 30 seconds.
Good heavens, that's terrible. We must find this woman and stop her.
Cohen, young Cohen.
Yes, sir.
What's 2.5% of 1,000 pounds?
2.5%? Not interesting. Chap went to his new accountant and he said, "I'm very worried." And the accountant said, "Now please, it's my job to worry for you. Now, let's have all the figures." Well, he says, "You see, I've got this house that cost me 500,000 quid. He said, "Yes, right. And I've got this flat in Mayfair, sort of pied a terre, which cost me 250,000 quid. He said, "Yes, right. So I've got this shooting lodge in Scotland, that cost me £10,000. "Yes." He said, "I've got this yacht that's anchored off on Teebe. That cost me 50,000 quid. He says, "What's your worry?" He said, "Well, I'm only earning £50 a week.
Well, I pay attention. Anybody know what a logarithm is?
Yes, sir, yes, sir. It's what trees dance to, sir.
Mathematics is a very complicated subject. People who understand it at a high level will tell you that it has nothing at all to do with the basic sort of sums that one used to do at primary school. You've only to look through the situations vacant for teachers to see that.
Required September for girls' school. 2 mathematics mistresses, 1 pure, 1 basic.
What makes the subject even more confusing is that the old system that I learnt at school has changed completely. The only thing to comfort the layman in his confusion is that a lot of eminent men have also had their suspicions about the subject, like Albert Einstein.
I don't believe in mathematics.
Bertrand Russell.
Mathematics may be defined as a subject in which we never know what we're talking about, nor whether what we are saying is true.
Faced with such uncertainty from top minds, maybe we can reflect Neddy Seagoon's confidence in this immortal exchange written by Spike Milligan in The Goon Show. How are you at mathematics?
I speak it like an idiot.
Well, even if we aren't that good at it, most of us have an inkling of what it's about. Like the character in J.M. Barrie's Quality Street, who asked,
"What is algebra exactly? Is it those three-cornered things?"
I was the worst algebra student. I sat on the final next to Alvin Beckman, who was very hip algebra-wise. And I got a mirror in the palm of my hand. I got all the answers off Beckman's paper in my mirror. I got them all backwards. He got 94, I got 49.
It was a small chip of the great Woody Allen. One obvious practical application of mathematical knowledge is statistics. From what is basically no more than counting, interesting results can be extrapolated. Mind you, statistics have had their critics. Andrew Lang.
He uses statistics as a drunken man uses lampposts, for support rather than illumination.
Mind you, statistics can prove remarkable truths. Here's a report from a German newspaper.
Taking the size of the average family as 4, that is, father, mother, and 2 children, it is clear that 560,000 of the inhabitants of Berlin sleep in 1 room.
And by statistical research, one can find out really useful practical things. From the Sunday Telegraph.
Mathematical rules have now been devised to allow pedestrians to remain as dry as possible when caught in a shower of rain. The calculations were reported in Nature yesterday by Mr. M. Scott, a mathematician at Durham University. When walking into the rain, one should lower the head and walk as fast as possible. When the rain is coming from behind, one should either walk forward leaning backwards or backwards leaning forwards at a deliberate pace.
Thank heavens for mathematicians. Never have known, would it? So it pays to work hard at school, poring over all those problems, wading through those interminable textbooks. Do you remember what maths lessons were like?
Well, sir, here's my homework. That question about the triangle is tricky, but...
Eureka! I know what's different about this room. Your desk, it's gone.
You see, trigonometry is very difficult, sir.
Candles, where is your desk?
My desk? Oh, my desk. Funny, I had it yesterday.
And if you don't tell me where it is, you'll have had it again today.
Yes, we had to get rid of it, sir. It was finished. You see, the inkwells were empty. That's what it was.
So you think you pulled a swift one, eh? No desk and no lessons. But you didn't reckon with Dr. Anthony Hancock. And if you sold your desk, you can do your lessons sitting at... Andrews, where's my desk?
Your desk, sir? Aren't you at it?
You're doing your best to get me at it, aren't you? And for the last time, where's my desk?
Oh, well, if that's the last time, let's talk about something else, shall we?
Andrews, where is it? I know it was here yesterday because I carved my name. I mean, it was right here and I sat on this bed. Where's my chair? The chair gone on my beautiful desk. I want my desk back exactly where it was, facing the picture of... facing that blank wall.
Oh, so it is. Well, I think I'd better go now, sir. I'm wanted on the telephone.
The telephone is not ringing.
Well, there's no sense in hanging around till it does, is there?
Andrews, since you will not tell me what has gone out of the room, I will check the inventory to see what we have left.
But,
I've checked it. One pencil.
One pencil? Don't anybody leave the room. There were two. What's happened?
Andrews, you will write after me 1,000 times. I must not flog Sir's belongings.
That was a voices in the past, wasn't it? Peter Brough and Tony Hancock from Educating Archie, 1951. Written by Eric Sykes and Sid Collins. Well, now, the average school child, like Archie Andrews, needs constant nagging to show any interest at all in his lessons, and then he gets it all wrong. The history of teaching mathematics is, like that of all other subjects, littered with errors. Let's hear some of the classic mathematic howlers, starting with a few definitions. First, parallel lines.
Those which, when they are produced so as they meet, do not meet.
A circle.
A round straight line with a hole in the middle.
A polygon.
A man with several wives.
Now a few questions. What are algebraical symbols?
Algebraical symbols are those used when you do not know what you're talking about.
What is half of five?
Well, it depends whether you mean the two or the three.
And now a little problem. If a farmer sold one quarter of his herd of cows for £100, what would the rest of the herd realize?
They would realize that some of the cows are missing.
I suppose that's very much the level of mathematical prowess that one might expect from the fourth form at St. Michael's.
Well, now, for today's lesson, we'll take a problem.
Yes, I've got one.
Oh, really, Charlie? Well, let's hear it. This is a chapter, boy.
Oh, you never mind them. You listen carefully. This is going to take all your brain.
Well, I am listening. Come on.
Well, a man's on one side of a river with a basket of cabbages, a goat, and an hyena.
What?
Hyena. Now, he wants to take the goat and the...
Wait a minute. What's he doing with a hyena?
I don't know. He's on the bank of the river with a goat, a basket of cabbages, and a hyena. And he wants to get to the other side.
Well, I think he does, too. So would I if I had a hyena. Nasty things, hyenas.
No, you don't understand. He wants to take the hyena and the goat and the cabbages with him.
Well, I can understand he wants to take the goat and the cabbages, but I can't think why he wants to bother with a hyena. You mean a laughing hyena, of course, don't you?
Listen, it doesn't matter if it was a laughing or a crying hyena. What does matter is that he wants to take the goat, the cabbages, and the hyena over the river. But he's only got a boat big enough to take one thing at a time. Now, how does he take them all over?
One at a time, he just said so.
All right, clever dick. Which does he take first?
Why, I really don't see any matters. The single argument's going to take...
What, leave the hyena and the goat on the other side?
I suppose so.
In that case, sir, the hyena will eat the goat.
Well, all right, then take the hyena first.
Well, then the goat will eat the cabbages.
Well, then take the goat over first. I mean, the hyena won't eat the cabbages, even I know that.
Very well. You know, you're going to get yourself into such a mess in a minute. What does he take next?
The cabbages.
No, sir. In that eventuality, the goat will devour the cabbages while he returns for the hyena. Actually, take the hyena over, the same thing will happen.
Well, does this fella know all this?
Of course he does.
And he sure wants to get him across?
Definitely.
Please, sir.
Yes?
Why don't they go round by the bridge?
It was Will Hay, with Charles Hawtrey, John Clark and Dick Francis, first broadcast, I noticed, in the Home Service in 1944. Now, for most of us, mathematics only really comes to life when removed from the world of schoolrooms and applied to real life. Economics and commerce are extensions of mathematics, and a good grounding in the subject can ultimately be quite profitable. Commercial life is the practical application of maths. Here's a definition by Ambrose Bierce.
Commerce, a kind of transaction in which A plunders from B the goods of C, and for compensation, B picks the pocket of D of money belonging to E.
The analysis of that process is called economics, a science made necessary by the unusual nature of our species. Adam Smith.
Man is an animal that makes bargains. No other animal does this. And no dog exchanges bones with another.
George Bernard Shaw didn't have much time for the practitioners of the study.
If all economists were laid end to end, they would not reach a conclusion.
Still, it's the principles of economy that enable those who understand them to make money, or at least not to worry about borrowing money. Ethel Watts Mumford.
In the midst of life, we are lost in debt.
The skill, it seems, lies in accumulating debts with proper panache. Get a good credit rating. A definition by Charles Dickens.
Credit. A person who can't pay gets another person who can't pay to guarantee that he can pay.
That's the way to get ahead in the mathematics of money. After all, according to Sir Arthur Wynne Pinero,
a financier is a pawnbroker with imagination.
The trouble is that living on borrowing can lead to problems. A line by Saki.
I'm living so far beyond my income that we may almost be said to be living apart.
And then, even if you do manage to save a little money, there's the spectre of tax looming over it. Mark Twain.
What is the difference between a taxidermist and a tax collector? Well, the taxidermist takes only your skin.
It is to deal with all these problems that a race of men has emerged, fully versed in the facts and figures of tax. Men who understand the subtle arithmetic of how much the inland revenue is going to believe. These are accountants. How people first get into the business, I don't know. Perhaps they answer advertisements like this one from a provincial paper.
Young lady required to work in accounts office. Previous experience not essential. Bust must be able to type.
The working life of an accountant is spent in the public service of managing other people's money. And when that working life is over and he retires, he deserves a good send-off. Let's hear an accountant's farewell speech at his retirement party.
So, let's really hear it now for a wonderful old guy. Charlie Bedloe. Bedloe. Charlie? Well, thank you very much, Bruce. Golly, I've been sitting here listening to Mr. Clayton and Mr. Tipton and, of course, Bruce here. And through all of their speeches, one thought kept sort of recurring in my mind. I think I'm going to throw up. I have never heard such dribble in all my life. I don't suppose that it ever occurred to any of you that I had to get half stoned every morning to make it down to this crummy job. You'd be smiling and easygoing if you were gassed all the time.
Well,
But you put in your 50 years, and they give you this crummy watch. I try to make a big deal out of it. It works out to about 28 cents a year. But seriously, if it hadn't been for the 50 bucks a week that I glommed out of petty cash, well, I couldn't have made it on the lousy salary they pay it. Cashier and myself. And everyone was running, when I retire and she gets back from her vacation in Florida, whether we would get married, I suppose, and spend our declining years down there. She isn't coming back, by the way. I understand that sweet old Miss Wilson is into this company for about $100,000. It's a little deal that she's worked out. She either calls it double payrolling or ghost payrolling or something having to do with payrolling. I can never make heads or tails out of what she was talking about. Of course, she's down in Mexico with $100,000. And I'm up here with this crummy watch. So anything that I might say, I suppose, would be sour grapes. One last thing. A lot of people have asked me, Charlie, what are you going to do when you finally retire? Are you going to get a little part-time job in Florida? Or just a loll around the beach? Or, in other words, what am I going to do? I have some tapes from some office parties. That I'm going to let go for $1,500 a copy. Now let me take that back a minute. The June picnic may run 17.5. And with the money that I make off of the tapes and Ms. Wilson's $100,000, I should do pretty good. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bob Newhart. Accountants really come into their own in matters of tax. Here's a report from the Sunday Times.
The judge, who was well known for his wide knowledge of property and trust law, left £96,837 gross, net nil, according to his will published yesterday. His widow said, "This is not surprising. He was a tax expert and very astute."
The opposite extreme is to leave a will like that of François Rabelais.
"I owe much, I have nothing. The rest I leave to the poor."
Mind you, if he'd consulted the right sort of tax expert, he wouldn't have had that problem.
A new book has been climbing on the bestseller list. It's called Taxes, 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 What Do They Want From Us? And the author of this book is here with us tonight to tell us how we can save money through his system. Mr. Philip Henker?
Heinker.
Heinker, Philip Heinker.
That's right.
The inventor of the Heinker method.
Of taxes and money and the calculations therein thereof.
That's right. all of us are interested in that subject. Now, a person making, say, $100,000 income.
Do you know anybody?
Hypothetical.
Oh, I see. Because we could have a drink with him after the show.
Just a hypothetical.
Oh,
question, sir. If you were to make $100,000 a year, normally what would you pay in taxes?
Well, out of $100,000 a year, you would pay $90,000 of those dollars to your government. With the Hanker method, if you made $100,000, you'd pay $1.40. That's about it. Give or take a couple of cents.
Now, if that's a valid method, sir, we'd like to know a little more about it. Sir, would you care to comment or not on these taxes that exist in our country?
Certainly.
The cigarette tax?
No comment.
Gas tax?
No comment.
Amusement?
Comment.
Inheritance tax?
No comment.
School tax?
No comment.
Excise?
Comment.
Luxury tax?
Comment.
That all you can say, sir?
That's about it. I said either comment or comment.
Aren't you going to comment when you say comment?
No, when I tell you comment or no comment. I thought I handled that beautifully.
Sir, how about dependents? Who do you take off as your dependents?
I take off the entire nation of Romania.
You are relative there?
No, but I send that thing.
You send them
papers? I send them socks, I send them books, I send them old-time magazines. I send Romania a lot of things.
And you take off your...
Well, nobody else is claiming them. I think they're a legal deduction.
I can't believe that you're a certified public accountant. Is there some kind of allegiance to accountancy that you have to take?
Yes, you have to take the hippocampus.
Oh, you are a hippocampus.
Yes.
I see. Hippocampus. Do you remember your
hippocampus? Sure. We, the hippocampus of America, in order to form a more perfect bankbook, do hereby solemnly pledge that the government of the people, by the people, and for the people is taking too much money away from the people. We'd like to take a little of that money. Do you mind?
It was Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks. One way of hanging on to money even after death is by insurance. This is a business which exercises some of the best mathematical minds in the country in actuarial computations. It also exercises an enormous number of tongues in selling the stuff. Someone once said that if you hear from an old school friend out of the blue after 20 years, you can guarantee he wants to sell you an insurance policy. And insurance does have a lot of satisfied customers. The Finance Union.
My husband took out an accident policy with your company, and in less than a month he was accidentally drowned. I consider this a very good investment.
In order to understand the mysteries of insurance and finance, young people need a sound mathematical and commercial training. Fortunately, courses are available, as shown by this clipping from the Croydon Advertiser.
15 schoolgirls from Northwood Technical Institute occupied the first three rows of public benches at Croydon Magistrates Court on Friday morning during the hearing of a case of alleged indecent assault.
Preparing for the office party. At least their parents would understand what they were talking about when they got back after a day's study. The trouble is that new methods of mathematical teaching are more or less incomprehensible to the average parent. The old values don't seem important anymore. The Duke of Devonshire.
My advisors admit that you're correct in your belief that the children are getting less sums right, but they tell me that they're doing the sums more intelligently.
There's a comfort. I think the time has come for a lesson in the new mathematics from an acknowledged expert, Tom Lehrer.
Some of you who have small children may have perhaps been put in the embarrassing position of being unable to do your child's arithmetic homework because of the current revolution in mathematics teaching known as the new math. So as a public service here tonight, I thought I would offer a brief lesson in the new math. Tonight, we're going to cover subtraction. This is the first room I've worked for a while. It didn't have a blackboard, so we will have to make do with more primitive visual aids, as they say in the ad biz. Consider the following subtraction problem, which I will put up here. 342 minus 173. Now, remember how we used to do that. 3 from 2 is 9, carry the 1. And if you're under 35 or went to a private school, you say 7 from 3 is 6. But if you're over 35 and went to a public school, you say 8 from 4 is 6. Carry the 1, so we have 169. But in the new approach, as you know, the important thing is to understand what you're doing rather than to get the right answer. Here's how they do it now. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the tens place. Now that's really 4 tens, so you make it 3 tens, regroup, and you change the 10 to 10 ones, and you add them to the 2 and get 12, and you take away 3, that's 9. Is that clear? Now instead of 4 in the tens place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 10 to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look in the hundreds place. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 10 ones, and you know why 4 plus minus 1 plus 10 is 14 minus 1, because addition is commutative, right? And so you got 13 tens, and you take away 7, and that leaves 5. Well, 6, actually, but... The idea is the important thing. Now go back to the hundredth place. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Everybody get 1? Not bad for the first day. Time for new math. New math. It won't do you a bit of good to read new math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Now that actually is not the answer that I had in mind, because the book that I got this problem out of wants you to do it in base 8. But don't panic. Base 8 is just like base 10, really, if you're missing 2 fingers. Shall we have a go at it? Hang on. You can't take 3 from 2. 2 is less than 3, so you look at the 4 in the 8th place. Now that's really 4 8s, so you make a 3 8s, regroup, and you change an 8 to 8 ones, and you add to the 2, and you get 1 2 base 8, which is 10 base 10, and you take away 3, that's 7. Okay? Now, instead of 4 in the 8th place, you've got 3 because you added 1, that is to say 8, to the 2, but you can't take 7 from 3, so you look at the 64s. 64. How did 64 get into it? I hear you cry. Well, 64 is 8 squared, don't you see? When you ask a silly question, you get a silly answer. From the 3, you then use 1 to make 8 ones. You add those 1s to the 3, and you get 1 3 base 8, or in other words, in base 10, you have 11, and you take away 7, and 7 from 11 is 4. Then I'll go back to the 64s. You're left with 2, and you take away 1 from 2, and that leaves... Now, let's not always see the same hands. One, that's right. Whoever got one can stay after the show and clean the erasers. For it worth new math, new math. It won't do you a bit of good to read new math. It's so simple, so very simple, that only a child can do it. Come back tomorrow night. We're going to do fractions.
Tom Lehrer. And that's about it for mathematics. Let's close with a little epitaph.
Here lies a mathematician. It's really rather sad, but now they've taken him away, there's nothing left to add. Logs have made his coffin, now the sum of all is done, and only pallbearers are left to dot and carry one. And death is now the problem which makes the equation so. If the great unknown be X, then why did he have to go?
Next week, we'll be continuing our meander through the humour of the school curriculum and going into science. Until then, goodbye. Anything you'd like to add?
Yes, I'll just get my calculator then.
Frank Muir Goes Into Mathematics was written by Frank Muir and Simon Brett and produced by Jeffrey Perkins.